Hi, everybody. My name's Scout. I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict in recovery. Now my face is really big. I'm going to switch. There we go. Okay. It's really wonderful seeing all of you with your children. I haven't seen my daughter in quite some time. So it's really beautiful to see all of you with your children. So I'm Scout. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a drug addict, and I've been in recovery for a year. On April 15th, I picked up my 1 year coin in AA. Just like a brief history of my background. I was an only child, with my mom worked at Denny's, and we lived in an apartment, and my dad, who adopted me, was like terminally ill for most of my childhood. And so it was like me and my mom were like a team, and she was very, emotionally unstable. And I was often called to help her raise me. So I kind of came out of the womb a little grown up, and dealt with like tragedy and upset. But I had a lot of love growing up. And then by the time I got to high school, I was ready to be a grown up. I started hanging out with older kids and linked up with dropouts from my high school that would, come hang out with me, after school, and, the classic, started skipping school, and, to further my growing up really fast, I ran away from home with a 28-year-old man when I was 15 years old. It was all, considered to be like my fault. Like my mom would always refer to it as like the hurricane years, when in reality, that was a crime and I was a victim. and I see a lot of parallels between this moral thing about addiction and alcoholism, I was a fairly successful drug addict and alcoholic for most of my life. I was able to maintain a job. I was able to, pretty much like just barely skirt by without being fully present in life. And I led a double life in a lot of ways, I would get really good grades, or I would, for instance, I was on the debate team, in my early years in high school before I ran away. And I was at a debate tournament at Harvard University. But I also got suspended from school for 3 weeks because I got blackout drunk on vodka in the hotel room after the debate tournament. So that was kind of like my MO, like, look at how good I can be, but like, let's get fucked up. I got away with a lot. And really what it was drugs and alcohol for me, were a spiritual experience. I felt like the truest version of myself. I felt connected to the world around me. I felt connected to other people. I felt comfortable in my own body. I felt like I could be free, in a way that I just wasn't able to be without the use of drugs and alcohol. I have vague memories in my childhood of that feeling of freedom, that feeling of being like my authentic self as a young, young child. And I often think of that time in my life as a young child is, like that was like when I was in touch with a God still, cause I was a baby, I was a kid. And, I've heard before people say like children are closest to God cause they just came from God. And I think that that's kind of what it was. And then as, different like life experiences and trauma and things load on, I just became increasingly more uncomfortable in my body. So I ended up, so I'll fast forward a little bit, you know, and I've done like all the drugs. Like, I don't think there's a drug on the face of the earth that I haven't done. If you give me like a time range, like a date range, I can tell you what drug was like my main go-to at that point in time. It often depended on where I was living, who I was dating, and who my friends were. And I often, you know, like alcohol is not my first choice. I mostly would use alcohol if I didn't have a plug, pretty much. Or because it was like the socially acceptable drug. So I knew that I could get wasted on alcohol with most people because it was so common in the world, you know, in our country and, society. I also like have memories too. I was just talking about this the other day. I have memories of like kind of like always being like, how much can I consume? And how normal will it be for me to consume as much as I can? Like even as a kid at the dinner table, with my family, like the appetizer plate with the shared food in the middle of the table, when there was like one jalapeno popper left, I would fixate on that jalapeno popper and like look around everybody, like, is anybody else going to eat the last one? Or how much can I eat before they do? And I would do the same thing with alcohol when I was out with friends. I'd be watching how much alcohol people had in their glasses, what pace they were, and trying to like match my pace with theirs, or encourage them to drink more. And then I lost pretty much every job I've ever had, because of drugs and alcohol, or because I couldn't show up because of drugs and alcohol. But you know, I worked in the service industry where that was kind of a normal thing. And so I could get away with it. I got a really cool job in Hawaii and I was working on a cruise ship in Hawaii. And I was only able to hold that job for like 3 months before I got fired for alcohol. So fast forward a little bit, I get pregnant, I get married, and I have a baby, and, I don't know how, but I managed to be sober during my pregnancy. And I really think it was just like circumstantial luck, honestly. I was addicted at that time to an over-the-counter drug called Kratom and Phenibut. And when I found out I was pregnant, I flew out to South Carolina to visit my mom. And I didn't even consider the fact that I had been physically dependent on this substance, and I didn't bring any with me on the plane. And I was talking to my then boyfriend, now ex-husband, about being like just in a fit of rage pretty much the entire time I was there. And he was like, you're withdrawing from Kratom and Phenibut right now. That was like my God's nice, tricky little way to get me to detox and not, I don't know. But, I remember being happy when I was pregnant. I really remember being truly like happy. When I had my baby, I had a C-section and I left the hospital with an Oxycontin prescription, and I was medicated or, you know, high or drunk pretty much ever since the day I got back from the hospital with her. And I left my husband, in September of 2018. And, it was hard. It was miserable. For 3 years during our marriage, I went to a doctor and I essentially manipulated the doctor into giving me an Adderall prescription. I was like overfunctioning for a family of four. I had a teenage stepdaughter and then my toddler daughter, and I was taking care of my husband too. I worked full time and I went to school full time. I couldn't keep up. You know, I went with the intention of getting an Adderall prescription, and I did. And I kept it secret from my husband, mostly because I didn't want to share, and because I felt like if it was just my thing, that it wouldn't seem like as much of an addiction. You know, if it was a thing that like I was getting from the doctor, bringing home and sharing with him, then it would be like a problem. But if it was my prescription from the doctor that was just mine, It wouldn't be. And for 3 years, I managed, and people started to think that I was like having like a mental health crisis. And when I left him, there was this sense of freedom. And there was nobody to hold, there was nobody, I didn't have to come home to anybody. So I could come home in any state I wanted because there was no other adult there that was going to be like, what's going on? I stopped going to the doctor and getting my Adderall prescription because I found methamphetamines, and rapidly started declining. And, everybody around me, my mom, my employer, my daughter, my ex-husband, my friends, they all thought that I was bipolar and having a mental health crisis, but really I was just on meth. I almost died. I got a rare brain infection called bacterial meningitis. And I went into what they described as sudden onset dementia. It was terrifying. I had maybe like 3 or 4 days. There were a lot of drugs involved, in my home, where I was awake in this world, but living, in a hellish nightmare in some other world in my mind. And, the guy that was living with me at the time, my daughter was with her dad, and it was just after Christmas. I just dropped her off when I started getting really sick. And, he called a mental health crisis line because he was afraid that the police would shoot me because of the way I was acting. And they found me running around naked outside. I have a couple of memories of being in the hospital, but mostly just like hellish nightmares. I was living in a scary paranormal world. And when I woke up, I was in a coma for a week in the neurotrauma unit at Legacy Emmanuel. And when I woke up, I wasn't the same person. I don't know if it was just the brain infection. I don't know if it was the drugs. I don't know if it was my higher power telling me like, this is where you're going if you don't stop. And I was in and out of, lucidity and paranoid delusions and psychosis. I saw my daughter once, about a month after I got out of the hospital. And then everything's just really blurry about my memory from them. My mom stopped talking to me and I wasn't allowed to see my daughter. And, for all of 2019, I was destroyed. It was like my whole identity, had been taken from me. That like order and harmony that I remembered as a small child, that like connection with like my own spirit. I really like thought I was dead and living in hell. And I just could not stop doing drugs. I could not stop drinking. I just couldn't. The power of choice was completely gone. And I would freak out, get high, and then look around and realize that my daughter wasn't here. And start running off to her. And I had a lot of interactions with police officers and EMTs. I spent a significant amount of time hospitalized. I've been in like restraints in pretty much every single psychiatric emergency department in the Portland metro area. I even made it all the way out to like McMinnville once. And every time they would just, they'd be upset with me. They'd be annoyed by me. They'd restrain me for a few days, wait for me to dry out, and then send me out into the world again and say, good luck. Nobody really knew how to help me. And I had a few interactions during this year. One of the times was after a court date pertaining to my daughter. And I was so angry. And I just sat outside the courthouse and I refused to move. And somebody had like come and like brought me some Chinese food and an NA meeting schedule and set it down next to me. Another time I was on the MAX, which is like our like public transportation system out here, like bawling on the MAX, looking like a crackhead. Like this woman came up to me though, and without even hearing any of my story or anything, she was just like immediately like held my hand and said to me, like, I'm in AA. If you ever want to come here, like I have places you can go to. So like I had had these women coming up to me, telling me about AA and like telling me where to go. And I was so sick, and I couldn't make my way here. And I had pretty much given up. I started having like suicidal, homicidal thoughts, really, really awful, awful thoughts. And then I live in Section 8 housing, and, I got a 10-day eviction notice on my door with no ability to remedy. And I was all alone and I was about to be homeless. And, I knew about AA because I live right across the street from a recovery center, and I would go over there a couple times and grab, you know, bum cigarettes or like pop in, and I could hear them outside like, I love you. I was like, yeah, and I was smoking crack for a while too because I thought that it would like the meth was like making me go crazy, and I'd be like inside like hitting my pipe and I could hear them out there. Yeah. And then I got word that I lost custody of my daughter in my divorce proceedings. I was never served papers. I didn't even know the trial took place. I just got an email from a lawyer saying that I didn't have custody anymore. And I got the eviction notice on my door like the next week. And then I came to AA and I had some memory issues, pretty significant memory issues. And I told some of the women there that, I couldn't remember that I liked it here and I couldn't remember to come and if they could text me every day and remind me. And they did. And I just kept coming back. And for 46 days, I stayed sober. I just went to meetings. I didn't have a big book. I didn't have a 12-12 and I didn't have a sponsor, but I had something that I hadn't had in a really long time, which is a community. I thought that I had been trying to build a community in my own apartment, and really I just had a trap house. I was so, ecstatic to finally be around a group of people who weren't mad at me, and they weren't afraid of me. Some of them were still a little bit afraid of me. I was still kind of scary, but, yeah. And so I went to meetings every single day. I got really good advice when I first got here, which was, you don't have to do everything. Just show up to a meeting. Don't drink or use in between, and then show up to another meeting. And so that's what I did. And I made friends. And I also saw that, like, that harmony and that order, you know, like I saw people who were like happy and sober. And my home group is a young people's meeting that takes place at nighttime. And they're silly. They like yell things out. Like it's kind of like, if you've ever been to like Rocky Horror Picture Show, they're like yell out things like, I don't know if you saw me, I went, ah, when you read the bark, 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 bark part. They do that throughout the whole readings. And so I was just like, these people are sober. Like they're so goofy and silly and they throw chairs when people take time. And it's just this like happy, joyous place. And with a bunch of misfits, you know? And so I stuck around and we would, you know, go and sing karaoke after the meetings. And, but that wasn't enough because I have a disease. So I have an allergy of my body and an obsession of my mind. And the only solution for me, was in the spirit. And simply community was not going to cure me. And I was white knuckling it. I had the phenomena of craving, the phenomena of craving was still present in me, even without putting the substance in my body. Even though I had ceased putting the substance in my body, The obsession of my mind was so strong that it was triggering the phenomena of craving in the gut of my stomach. And it was like, I finally like looked down at my stomach and was like, fine, okay. And I relapsed. And like within 6 hours, I was back in a state of psychosis. And I came right back the next day. And I took the first sponsor that was available to me. A friend that I had made in program recommended her. And I remembered meeting her once before. And what she had said to me was to look for the people who are happy in AA. And I really liked that. And then I also heard the message to do the steps as quickly as possible. And I brought that up to my sponsor, and I asked her if she was available to meet with me every night of the week. This was during lockdown, quarantine, COVID time at this point. And she said yes. And the way that she put it was like, she saw that I needed some relief. And I didn't understand that. I didn't understand how the 12 steps were going to provide me relief, but I was willing. I was very, very willing. And over FaceTime in quarantine, every night of the week, we met and read the book. And when the book told us to do something, we stopped and we did that thing. When we finished up a step in the book, we moved over and read the step in the 12 and 12. For my first step, that was challenging because I so badly did not want to be an alcoholic and an addict. I didn't call myself an alcoholic for months. My relapse, I consider to be my step one work. I didn't even have self-knowledge when I came in. I just had problems and I need somebody to fix my problems. And because my drugs and alcohol were my medicine for my whole life, they always worked. And all of a sudden they stopped working and having really, really adverse effects. I didn't think that the use itself was a problem. So my relapse was like ended with me like crying, like, I don't want to be an addict. I don't want to be an alcoholic. And it was the self-knowledge that I needed to move forward. I also did not have a higher power. I didn't consider God in my life. I fancied myself an intellectual. I thought that you know, it was like a opiate of the masses. Meanwhile, like I was like on opiates, you know, and what was weird too is, you know, there's like all of these young people and they're talking about like, you know, like, fucking running cons and, you know, like dope deals and stuff. But then like when I call them about my problems, they would say to me like, have you talked to your higher power about that yet? I'd be like, what? No. Like, I have, like, and so I just kind of like rode with it. And my sponsor is really open-minded and I kind of adhere to what she told me once, which is like, I believe everything. And I was like, okay, well, I can be open-minded like that. And so I took my second step. And then for my third step, we, were on FaceTime and we got on our knees and we both have cats and we like held our cat's paws on FaceTime and did our third step prayer. I had written down participation ribbon next to the second and third step in my big book, because that was how it was described to me. Like I just needed to like have a willingness. And I felt like I got a participation ribbon and then I could move forward. And I read the spiritual appendix 2 in the back of the book, which just describes the spiritual experience as like, you know, in an educational variety. And I was definitely of that variety. So by the time I got to my fourth step, that's when things really started to change for me. A lot of my resentments were like the state, DHS, my ex-husband, my mother, myself. I had having my daughter taken from me was very traumatic. And it was like a specific day with a specific series of events that transpired when CPS got involved. And it was really hard for me to process that trauma. And I did it with the fourth step, with my sponsor. And, you know, it was just such a blessing and a relief to have just like a bunch of columns, you know, like who, what did they do? What did I do? What in me is getting it affected by this? And like, how can I fix it? You know, like, and it's like faith in action. And I had a lot of things that I had not told anyone before that I was able to tell my sponsor. And when I did my meditation after my fifth step, oh, and also I was not capable of doing my fourth step on my own. I tried. I had to sit, I was on the phone with my sponsor and we went through the whole thing. Like my fourth and my fifth step was like an 8-hour day long affair. And we sat down and did the whole thing together. And when I did my meditation that night, I felt relief. I felt peace and I felt the higher power from my step two and my step three that I wasn't connected with yet. For the first time. I've heard of, like, I was just talking about this last night about there's a speaker tape too titled Steps 4 through 7, The Launching Pad to the Fourth Dimension. And that was really the case for me. Once I did my fourth and my fifth step and my sixth and my seventh step, my first time around, was really just like, I have character defects. Who'd have thunk it? and also like, please help me. Please help me take them away. Please. Like, that's it. And here's a list of contrary action that I can try to do. And now this time around, I'm reading Drop the Rock and I'm going in a little more in depth with it. I'm in 6 and 7 right now with my second round of step work. And I've had some realization since my 1-year birthday, which is that somebody had told me when I first got here, they were like, Scout, you're looking at the world like this, like these are all the drugs and the alcohol. Like that's what you're looking through the world like. And then I realized that there was even more layers than that. Like there was fear and resentment and shame and all of these things just like clouding my vision, disconnecting me from the world around me, from the great reality and from my higher power and from myself, like from my true self, you know? The character defects that came up in my fourth step and that I was praying to have removed from my sixth and seventh step, it became so abundant to me, so apparent to me rather, that the line in the third step prayer about freeing me from the bondage of self, I'm like, how bound to myself I am, how bound I am to my attachments, to my desires and my instincts, and how bad, like I became free of like, the obsession to drink and use was lifted very quickly from me once I started doing step work. I was free from drugs and alcohol. I was free from constantly being captured by cops and EMTs. I was free from psychosis, but I wasn't free from myself. You know, I still had all of these like layers of shit, just like, I'm sorry, it's hard for me not to curse, just like layers, layer after layer after layer of fear and resentment, that I was like, I'm like shackled to. And it's like, I just realized this like last week, like how, like you could hear people say, like, look for people who have something that you want, like, do you want what they have? And I, you know what I want that people have is I want freedom for myself. And I've met a few people in AA who have that, you know? And I feel like I'm starting, like now that I've realized that, like, that's what I feel like I'm on my way to having that, like being free for myself. Like I want that freedom. Let's see. Step one. Got over my
delusion.
How, what? Step one, got over my delusion of not being an addict and an alcoholic. Finally got honest with myself and others. Two and three, I had a little bit of hope and I had a little bit of faith, but all of that really actually sunk in once I did four through seven. My experience with my amends, I have made two formal amends from my harms done list in a year of sobriety. All of my other amends have been living amends. I've been blessed with a lot of new relationships in sobriety, and a lot of opportunities to behave differently than I would have in the past. They were good experiences, my formal amends from people in the past, but what truly brings me a spiritual experience, is encountering new relationships and new situations, and encountering, opportunities to behave now with the spiritual principles, as my foundation. And so I try to live in living amends every single day. My amends to my mom, I heard in a speaker tape too once that, amends should be over coffee, not dinner. You want to get in there, get it done and get out. On the phone with my mom, we were just on the phone a little bit too long and she said something that I didn't like. And it ended with me screaming at her that she drove me to addiction. I was like, you drove me to addiction. I'm doing this wrong. I love you. Bye. I'm sorry. And hanging up the phone. We still don't have a relationship. I'm sure that I'm going to get around to that again once I get to 8 and 9, second time around. But, you know, I've also heard that like people do 4 steps their whole life, you know, 20, 30, 40 years of recovery. And the last person they have on a 4-step is their mom. So, I'm trying to be realistic about my expectations. Okay. 10, 11, and 12. Yeah. So, step 10 is fantastic because I have those columns, a nice, easy formula to deal with the conflict in my life, a nice, easy formula to deal with when the bondage of myself is getting in my way and making me not useful to the world around me. Step 11, my favorite. Here I am with a new God, a new higher power, a complete psychic shift on how I operate with myself and those around me. Step 11 is being united in like mind, body, and soul, being united in my body, being united with my mind, being united with the world around me and my higher power, seeing the it's like one of the pillars of the triangle that is like so important. And I feel like we don't talk about that much. You know, we talk a lot about recovery. We talk a lot about service. We don't talk so much about unity. And I really feel like that unity can be built with conscious contact with your higher power, conscious contact with yourself, with myself, and conscious contact with my fellows. Step 11 for me is a lot of like non-AA literature. I'm seeking, I think human beings have come up with the coolest ideas about God and I love learning about them. And now that I have this open mind, I'm trying all kinds of new ways, to be spiritually, in tune. I really just have fun with it. I just have fun with it. Every time I learn something new, I feel closer to my higher power. And then step 12, service. I had today, I went and I did, some Postmates deliveries and it took me into the neighborhood where my daughter lives. And, I used to like not even be able to drive down there. I would start like shaking. And today I was like right by her house, where she lives with her dad. And I saw this woman walking down the street who was like clearly like spun out. And I just like had a moment of prayer. I thought about how sick I was and how much I needed help. And I just like honestly and so authentically, like just wanted to make all of my experience not for nothing. Like I just was like praying to my higher power, like, please guide me and put me wherever the hell I need to be, doing whatever you want me to do so that I can be like all of my experience can be of service to somebody else who's in my position. Praying to be of service every day, whenever the shackles of myself, of my own instincts, of my own desires, my own wants, my own attachments start to like cloud my vision. It's always suggested to me by my friends and family and program, to look for the opportunity where I can be of most service, you know, like whenever I'm disturbed, you know, it's always acceptance of the situation, the person, place, or thing, so that I can find serenity again and refocusing to see where I can most be of service. You know, if I'm so disturbed in this one area or this one place and I'm not of service here, it's like, if I'm disturbed, I'm uncomfortable and I'm not useful to the world around me. And the entire purpose of my existence is to be useful to those around me. I've been given so many gifts in AA. I think the biggest gift I've been given in AA is the realization that everything I have in life is a gift, and everything I've ever had in life was a gift. And I just didn't even know it. Like, just didn't even know it. And when I got sober, it was like all of the material things that I had lost, like kind of came back to me, like almost in the exact form. Like my first job in recovery was the same job I had before, like pizza management, you know, the amount of money in my bank account that I lost was the same amount of money that I got back in my bank account. Like everything. I had a Toyota Corolla. Now I have a Toyota Prius, like all the little presents. God was like, okay, let's try again. Here you go. And this time I have a realization that they're all presents and they're all gifts. You see, I really hung up on good versus evil in the world. I listen to a lot of speaker tapes. There's another speaker tape. Sandy Beach mentions that he's like, you know, like, I don't really think about the world like that anymore. It's like, it just is. The world is what it is. And we're all God's children, just like trying to get a little bit closer to God. I spent so long, 15 years of drug and alcohol use, just trying to have fun. I'm really grateful now that in sobriety, I'm just here to have a good time. I'm here to be useful to those around me and have fun. And now that I have this like connection to my higher power, I feel like I can actually do that. I wanted to talk a little bit. Let's see. I talked about honesty. Oh, wanted to talk about surrender a little bit. When after my very first meeting, I came home and surrendered to a God I didn't even have yet. Like this like thing came over me where I was like in my kitchen, like falling to my knees, surrendering. And it was almost as though I had a preview of a realization I would have like 6 months later. It was a really weird experience. And now today I surrender, you know, I like thinking of it as like surrendering to the trip. Like my life is a trip and I'm surrendering to it. I have no power or say or control in the way anything happens. I can just live by spiritual principles and surrender to the world around me. And look for where I can be of service and useful and like bring happiness and joy and love. And then control. I wanted to touch on control a little bit too. I use drugs and alcohol to try to control my inner being, and to try to control what I could make happen in the world around me. I was constantly trying to control something. And a part of that surrender is realizing that I don't have control over anything. I barely have control over myself. and relinquishing that control is such a relief that, I can wake up every morning and exist in the reality around me sober, you know, like sober emotionally, sober from drugs and alcohol. And I can turn it over to something greater than myself, whatever that is. And try not to get in the way of whatever, like, or, you know, whatever flow the world is going through the day, and try not to like interrupt that flow as much as possible. I feel like I should have a nice little bow to tidy up the end of my thing, but my throat hurts. I feel okay. Thank you so much for being, I will say about my daughter though. I got a lawyer, and I have a modification for parenting time in, and I should be in front of a judge and be able to see her soon, but it took a really, really long time. So I'm really happy to see all of you ladies with your children. I can't wait to have her back too. Okay. That's all. I'm Scout. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for allowing me to be of service.
Oh my God, Scout, I love you. I don't know you, but I love you.
I know. Thank you so much. That was awesome.
That was an amazing story.
Yes.
Thank you so much for having me.
Just so happy to have you come.
My favorite response to I don't know you in AA is, yeah, you do. I'm an alcoholic. Oh.